This is the special NFL Draft Edition of The Boss.
The Boss himself, and I don't mean Springsteen.
In the gloss. Check out my lip gloss,
I only rock clear. On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Free All Deep Penetrating Oil. Look for the Silver Can in stores or visit freealloil.com.
Live from Las Vegas, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
Viva Las Vegas.
How about that intro?
What can you say about the king? The king is the king.
Gotta love the king. This is David Gow, the boss, Carla Dawson, the gloss next to me. It is great to be in Vegas with you. And are you excited for tonight's deliberations?
I am so excited. I think we could be witnessing one of the most unpredictable drafts in modern history here.
Well, I've been going back in my head.
I don't even know who's number one. Yes.
You can scratch your head. Nobody knows who number one is. Nobody can envision how many quarterbacks are going to go.
If any.
Usually, in the first round. And there have been, usually by this moment, the day of the draft, the number one pick overall is very clear. There's even an agent talking about the contract to come. Or it's a Trevor Lawrence, and it's been obvious for months. No. Right now, I don't think we know where the Jaguars are going to go with that number one pick.
No, and you take a look at last year's draft. A quarterback was taken in 1, 2, and 3 with Trevor Lawrence. And then who went after Trevor Lawrence? Why am I blanking on this?
Well, so last year we had...
Trey Lance was 3.
Zach Wilson was number two to the Jets. And so 3 quarterbacks right out of the chute last year. This year, it's a whole different ballgame. The quarterback class, not impressive. Malik Willis, probably the first quarterback we'll hear today, and probably in the first round, so we will hear him today. But after that, I'm not sure that anybody else. Maybe a Kenny Pickett works his way into the first round.
And then Desmond Ridder. Yeah, there's a lot. It's a lot of uncertainty. I would say the theme of this draft is expect the unexpected.
Love to see that. Right, when we're going to come back, we're going to actually get a chance to look at this. Probably the top 5, top 10 picks. We'll get a good read on where the teams are going to go. It does look like the elite defensive ends are going to be picked off pretty quickly. Probably the top 5 or 6 picks. We're going to see those big 3 go off the board. We'll break them down when we return. We'll take a look at that. We're also going to get a read on the best positions in the draft. It looks like wide receivers are going to be frequent and often. We're going to hear their names.
Cornerbacks as well. Corner, not quarter.
All right, when we come back, we'll break down the top part of the draft. That up next here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
It's a special NFL draft edition of The Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Free All Deep Penetrating Oil. Look for the Silver Can in stores or visit freealloil.com.
Now, live from Las Vegas, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
This segment of The Boss and the Gloss on Sports Map Radio is brought to you by our friends at Steel. Steel maximizes the benefit of battery-powered tools while delivering powerful performance. Great to have Steel on board. Okay, Jacksonville Jaguars, they are on the clock. And it wasn't that long ago that people thought, well, maybe they'll take an offensive tackle, they'll take an Evan Neal to protect their investment in Trevor Lawrence. But now they've signed Cam Robinson to a deal, and it looks like
they're $54 million.
They're shying away from that deal, right? And Peter King said, expect a surprise from Jacksonville. So what does that tell you? A surprise, it's not an offensive lineman. Who do you see Jacksonville taking?
I think they're not taking Aiden Hutchinson. I think that's the surprise.
Because that would have been the safe choice.
That would have been the safe choice, especially now locking up Cam Robinson for the next 3 years. And so I think that's the surprise. I think the other thing Doug Peterson said when asked, who are you taking number one, new head coach Doug Peterson, he said, we better get it right. This player will come in and he will start. That's why he's the number one pick. So what this is telling me a little bit with Peter King saying expect the surprise and Doug Peterson's comments here is that Balky wants one thing, Peterson or Shad Khan want another.
Yeah, you hate to see a disconnect between a GM and a head coach, but your premise is that Peterson would love to go with Aiden Hutchinson, the sure thing, but they're going to go with Trayvon Walker.
That's what I think.
Trayvon Walker, who's...
Because Balky's obsessed with him.
Well, his physical tools are amazing, but his performance on the field, not so stout. Hutchison's stats over the course of his career, certainly somebody you can bank on. You just feel very confident about what you're getting in Aiden Hutchison.
Yeah, I'm confused by this, really. I mean, maybe at this point we're splitting hairs, but, you know, first of all, I don't have a lot of faith in Trent Baalke. Look at the past couple of years. There's a reason Jacksonville's last game of the season that the fans came with clown masks on. I mean, that's... There you go. So do I trust that kind of respect that he has earned from his fan base? No. So this is what I think is curious. So you look at Aiden Hutchison out of Michigan, 14 sacks last year, 14 sacks in the Big Ten.
He's
I mean, that was a competitive. Yeah, they were able to beat Ohio State. It was a great season for them. But his Pro Football Focus grade is like a 94.5. And his pass rush win rate is 25%. I mean, that's amazing. Look at Trayvon Walker. He also has great numbers, but his Pro Football Focus grade is a 70.5. 95 versus 70.5. And his pass rush win rate is 10%. So I think if you're drafting Trayvon Walker high, which obviously his film is amazing, he's great, he deserves to be drafted high. Why would you go with potential and upside, which clearly he's got it, when you can go with a sure thing? I think part of Trayvon Walker's issue is that he plays multiple positions on the line. And so when you're that versatile, maybe it is harder to hone your skills in one area. So I don't know. What do you think? What do you do if you're
Well, that would be the best hope for the Jaguars. No, I would go with Aiden Hutchison if I were making the decision for them. But most mocks now, the word on the street, Trayvon will go number one to the Jaguars. The other defensive end, whom we've not talked about yet, is Kayvon Thibodeau.
Your new friend.
The third of the big three.
Yesterday.
So this is one of my highlights I can speak to, having been here in Vegas for several days, is I went to a pool party yesterday.
Spare us the details.
With Kayvon and a lot of friends. And it was a great, great party. A very good, sort of an electric scene, if you want to say it. Maybe even a cheeky scene. It was pretty impressive.
Well, you were at the pool. I was doing our homework, but I'm not bitter. I'm fine. I'm totally fine.
Listen, I invited you to come to the pool party, but I did say that the dress code there was bikinis. And
you lost me at bikinis.
Oh, yeah. That was it, huh? All right. Well, I can tell you that Kayvon is excited for tonight. And in his view, I mean, I was poking around saying, where do you think you're going to land? And I think he thinks he's going to go to one of the two New York teams. The Jets, of course, drafting at number 4. The Giants drafting at number 5. And I think from his conversation, Kayvon Thibodeau thinks he's going to go to one of those two teams in New York. And that lines up with most of the mocks you see. Because if Walker goes 1... and Hutchison goes 2. I mean,
Detroit really wants him. They are really hoping.
They would scoop Hutchison in a heartbeat.
That would be amazing. Amazing for Detroit.
Here come the Texans at 3, and all kinds of scenarios with the Texans, very unpredictable. But if they don't take Thibodeau, then yeah, he probably drops to the Jets or the Giants at 4 or 5.
Well, and I would say I bet he ends up with the Jets because they've got head coach Robert Saleh, who is a defense minded guy. And the Giants, so between 2012 and 2021, the Giants have used 8 of their last 11 first-round picks on the offensive side of the ball. So to me, that tells me they'll pass on a defensive guy maybe at this point. Maybe they'll take a tackle.
Well, Giants Someone's are fascinating here. Giants pick at number 5. Today's news, they are not opting to exercise the fifth-year rookie contract element with Daniel Jones. So Daniel Jones will enter in his 4th season without the assurance of where he will be in year 5. And that's an intriguing statement because it's almost a recognition of failure. I mean, one of the best first metrics you really get on how a team feels about its first-round draft picks is do they exercise that year 5 option. And the Giants opting not to do that with Daniel Jones, and it might affect the way they look at tonight's draft. I mean, this is not a great draft for quarterbacks. It's not clear where they would get one. They certainly wouldn't want to take one at number 5 overall. That would just be too early. I mean, some have mocked Malik Willis to the Panthers at 6, but I just have trouble taking any one of these quarterbacks in the top 10.
You know, I have to give it to General Manager Joe Schoen for the Giants, because By not picking up Daniel Jones' option, they would have had to pay him $22.9 million. You know, he said, we learned from Carolina when they got Sam Darnold from the Jets. They picked up his option before they had seen him play a game for them. Ended up paying Sam Darnold almost $19 million. I mean, it's a great learning lesson. I mean, good for him.
And they learned from Baker Mayfield, where the Browns exercised that fifth-year option.
Yep.
Taking Mayfield up to a little over $18 million for next season. And now it's made Mayfield hard to trade. There are just not a lot of teams that want to both give up draft capital and take on a salary with a guy like Baker Mayfield. So, yeah, the Giants, if you've made a mistake, it's best to cut it loose.
Cut it loose now.
Or at least don't extend or make the mistake worse by exercising that fifth-year option when the salary really, really increases radically. So I guess this way they get a chance to see him in year four, look at how he performs, and look, if he performs really well, they can make a run at him next year and give him a big contract. But they're not right now tied to him for year five.
Well, let's talk about the word option. That means you can decide. And so far, they have not seen consistency in Daniel Jones' first couple seasons. They also, the Giants did not extend, pick up the fifth-year option on Dexter Lawrence as well, the lineman, so out of Clemson. So he also will be playing on an audition year, too, for them. So we'll see.
All right, when we come back, we're going to get a real treat. We're going to talk to a former NFL general manager, Randy Mueller, and we're going to ask him to take us inside the war room. We're going to ask him, what's it like to be a general manager, making a pick, feeling the butterflies of the first round of the NFL draft? It's Randy Mueller, former general manager of the Saints and the Dolphins. He will be up next year. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to an NFL draft edition of The Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Free All Deep Penetrating Oil. Look for the silver can in stores or visit freealloil.com.
Live from Las Vegas, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back. And joining us now on the Progressive Insurance guest line is former general manager of the Saints and the Dolphins, Randy Mueller. Randy, thank you so much for joining us. You're on the air with David and Carla.
My pleasure. Sounds like you guys are where everybody wants to be.
We're at the center of the universe here in Vegas, and it's exciting to be here. It really is. You can feel the buzz in the city, all these fans walking around with their team jerseys on. But as Carl and I were thinking about getting you on, and really appreciate your joining us, you've been in a war room where you've spent months and months creating a...
Just once or twice, maybe,
yes,
right?
The stack board, and then you walk in. What's it feel like? What's it like to be in that war room? Are there butterflies, anticipation? Walk us through that experience the night of the draft.
You know, for me, it was maybe a little different, but pretend you're studying for the LSAT or some kind of a test, right? If you've done all the studying and all the preparing that you think you can, you're pretty relaxed on test day, and that's always the way I felt. Walking in there that morning or that, you know, early afternoon, whenever it was, I just felt a little sense of relief because I knew we had been through every scenario imaginable, had studied all the pre-exams, you know, done all the mock drafts we could do, and I just felt like nothing was really going to surprise us. I did have a little bit of anxiety a lot of times with the position we were on the board. Example, for the first round, if we were 15 and I thought there were 12 players, I didn't like that. But I think for the most part, it's the heavy lifting is done. It's almost a sense of relief. And I felt, you know, very comfortable on draft day because of the preparation we have done.
Randy, so you were NFL Exec of the Year in 2000 for New Orleans. So I want to know, I'm curious, like looking at Jacksonville, for example, you've got Shad Khan wants something. Trent Baalke wants someone different. You're sitting at the clock at number one, and then Doug Peterson wants something a little bit different. And in some of the quotes, you can definitely tell that Baalke and Peterson are not possibly agreeing on the right thing. What's the pecking order? And is it organization specific, or what is your experience, Randy?
Well, that's a tough spot. I guess mm-hmm. I've been lucky all of my time, and I've worked for multiple owners from the Nordstrom family in Seattle to Paul Allen, all the way down through my time with the Saints, Tom Benson. I really never had an owner that had an opinion on what we should do. So that made it easy. He trusted us. He trusted we would go in the right direction. He trusted that we would build the team the way we envisioned it. And never did I have somebody say, hey, what about this or what about that? Now, I always would love the input, but it just never happened for me. I think the hierarchy is maybe different depending on the building you're in, but I always feel like the decision-making is the same. I've worked under a coach, I've worked level with a coach, and I've been the coach's boss, but we were always joined at the hip. So I think if there is some indecision in Jacksonville, I always would believe that we're going to pick a different lane. In other words, if we can't agree on exactly what we want to do, we're going to find a way to agree exactly. So it maybe we have to go a different route, but I wanted us all on the same page at all the time. So I don't know if that makes any sense or not, but I always feel like there are none of us smarter than all of us. So we got to work together. We got to build a consensus, and we're going to do what we all feel good about, not that one of us is kind of being forced into a corner to accept.
Yeah, I love that, Randy. And that's why you've had so much success in the NFL and you were exec of the year, because you realize you don't want finger pointing. If you get a guy that someone else didn't want and it doesn't go well, I mean, it's a whole mess. You end up like the Houston Texans, unfortunately. I know you spent a lot of your career in Seattle, and they have just traded away, as we know. They sit there at the number 9 pick tonight without Russell Wilson, who's now in Denver. What are you doing in Seattle? Are you going to pick up one of these quarterbacks? Are you content with Drew Locke? What do you like?
Well, they're in a unique place for them because they've not picked up your high, like you said before. I would hope that at 9, they actually pick the best player on their board when the clock gets to them. And that's something that they haven't been really good at. I think, and I know Pete, I know John Snyder, I know how they tick. Sometimes I feel like they get a little too cute, if that makes any sense, because they always want to make something happen, and maybe we trade back or we trade up or we pick somebody that nobody thinks we'll pick. Sometimes you can overthink these drafts too. They aren't one player away in Seattle. They've got to trust that they can evaluate and line these names up and, in my opinion, just pick the best player because they have needs everywhere. If it's a quarterback, so be it. I happen to like a couple of these quarterbacks, and I wouldn't criticize them if they picked the right one at 9. So I think they can go a lot of different ways. I just think it's rarefied air for them, one, because they've always picked at the bottom with Russell Wilson being in charge, and now they've got a complete different vibe in their building. And I know they think there's a sense of excitement with it, but the pressure's on them. I'll be honest, they haven't drafted great the last 5 or 6 years, and they've got to do better, and I think they know that.
We're talking to former NFL GM Randy Mueller. So, Randy, you just said something that popped out at me, which is that you like some of these quarterbacks, and you think it's possible that there'll be a couple taken in the first round or pretty high. Who do you like, and where do you see your favorites landing?
Well, I start with the criteria that what we're looking for in the NFL is different from maybe what succeed at the college level. I think you've got to check some boxes in order to feel comfortable picking a guy early. And for me, Kenny Pickett, the Pittsburgh kid, checks the most boxes. He's over 6'3". He's very accurate. He has an acronym for operating in the pocket with anticipation and feel. He's also athletic enough where he can make throws getting out of the pocket and without his feet being set. So I know this group as a whole has been taking a beating with all the geniuses and the analysts out there. I just don't see it quite as negatively. So I would have no problem with Kenny Pickett. I just think he's been there. He's done that. I don't think it's going to be a big conversion for him to step into an NFL, building and an NFL offense. I have a couple other guys that maybe I wouldn't pick in the first round, but like a guy named Bailey Zappe. He's from Western Kentucky. He may not be the first name off people's list, but at 6'5", he's going to be somewhat vision challenged, like Malik Willis, like Matt Corral. These guys are a bunch of guys that are under 6'1", so they're going to have challenges, let's face it. But I think Bailey Zappe exemplifies all the other things about playing quarterback and operates from the pocket well enough. The problem is that a lot of these 6-foot guys really struggle when they're forced to stay in the pocket. And defensive coaches in the NFL are really good. They end up making you stay in the pocket as a quarterback. So your success is determined on how you do from that one spot eventually. Now, it may take them a year or two to keep you in there, but we're finding that out even with Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray and these other shorter in stature guys. They're going to have to win from the pocket to be successful.
All right, Randy, I want to ask you, as a former GM, here's another GM headache, which is Deebo Samuel. I mean, Deebo, of course, is under contract with the 49ers, but has declared he wants out. What do you do if you're the general manager? What do you think the answer is? What's the next step there for John Lynch and the 49ers?
Well, I've never been one, Dave, to give away good players, so I would resist any alternatives to letting him out the door unless it really made us better in a lot of other ways. And I think that's a tough ask because I don't know if another team is going to give you what you want in compensation and yet be willing to pay Deebo Samuel whatever it is financially he wants, whether it's 20 or 25 million a year. So that's a hard ask for somebody. The other thing is I think people forget because everybody believes that it's kind of a player empowered league now. It's not quite like that in the NFL. The 49ers still have some leverage. Deebo can't miss camp. He can't miss, you know, the season. He's three seasons in, and he needs four to be a free agent. If he misses reporting to training camp, he's going to miss out on that fourth year. He can't afford to do that. So the 49ers have leverage. They do not have to move him, and therefore I wouldn't do it. Now, that doesn't mean it might not get ugly at some point, but that's business, right?
Yeah, that is business. It's interesting because during the season and even after the season, there was no indication from Deebo Samuel at all that to the public, to the Niners, that they thought they were going towards a long-term solution, no problem, into this offseason. Then all of a sudden, here came a trade request. It's a little head-scratching.
Well, it is, and I think it probably comes from the money that the other receivers got, the Devontae Adamses or the Tyreek Hills. They get large dollars, and all of a sudden, the dollar signs, everybody sees them, and they figure timing is everything. I better get mine right now.
So I want to ask you this, Randy, about positions. I mean, running back has been devalued, and the safety position is generally not considered a premier position in the draft, but here sits Kyle Hamilton, who seems to be an elite safety. How high can you take Kyle Hamilton at the safety position?
Well, I think a lot of that is determined on your options, for one thing. I think he is a really good player, but you're right. He plays a position that teams have struggled to allocate resources to, one, acquire, and then two, to pay and keep. So he's in a tough spot. I think it depends on the other options that you have when you select somebody like this. I think you could put guards into that, you know, category, and like you mentioned, running backs as well. I think the big guys and the fast guys seem to fall off the board quickest, and when you have options, that's where you go. So the other guys get pushed down the board. I think a little bit of the Kyle Hamilton thing come from, and I know this having watched his workout, it wasn't the greatest workout, and I'm not a workout guy because I don't believe you can judge football players running around in T-shirts and shorts, but he didn't do some of the things that would allow me to feel really good about where he's at. There's not a lot of 6'4 safeties playing in this league, so start with that premise. And so he's fighting history there. Maybe he's a nickel linebacker, maybe he does some things in third down packages, but I just think it's not a clear vision as to how he fits with some teams. That may push him down the board a little bit.
All right, we've only got about a minute to go. I'd love to hear who you think will surprise us tonight. What's going to be the biggest surprise to come out of this evening?
Well, I'm a little anxious to see what the Saints are going to do. You know, they've made a trade with the Eagles a few weeks ago and acquired their extra second-round pick. An extra first-round pick. So they have two picks, and they need volume of players. They've been hit through free agency and through their cap reduction to have to let some players go. I'm really interested to see if they package those two first-round picks and move up. The teams that have these two first-round picks, I think, are the ones that will be the most exciting to watch. They're all in play, and that's the Jets, the Giants, the Saints. A bunch of teams have more than one pick, so I'm anxious to see what they're going to do with them.
Oh, it's going to be fascinating. Yes, there's a consolidation of draft picks. So many teams with an extra first-round draft pick this
year. Green Bay and Kansas City, who knew?
Yeah, Green Bay and Kansas City never seem to have extra picks, right? Wow. And they're always picking at the end of the draft, at least in the last few years. It's been really fun to watch. Well, Randy, really appreciate your joining us. And you are running you're now the director of player personnel for the Houston Roughnecks, are you not?
Well, I was the last time the XFL came around. Who knows what's going to happen this time
No,
around.
I think you're coming back.
Well, time will tell. That's for sure, Dave. Time will tell.
All right. Well, great to visit you. Really appreciate you taking the time to be with us.
Thanks, Randy.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
All right. When we come back, we're going to get a chance to visit with John Cooper. He's a draft analyst from Our Lads, and we're going to talk to him about this wide receiver class, which may be historic. So many projected to go in the first round. That up next here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is an NFL Draft edition of The Boss and the Gloss on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Free All Deep Penetrating Oil. Look for the silver can in stores or visit freealloil.com.
Live from Las Vegas, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
All right, well, great to visit with Randy Mueller. Of course, a guy who's been in the room as a general manager with both the Saints and the Dolphins. And we could have spent a lot more time with him.
I know.
You wanted to talk to him about what it was like to work with Nick Saban.
Which, I did.
Nick Saban's your coach. You're the general manager. How do you argue with Nick Saban, right? Nick's the guy who always seems to have the answers. Now, Nick Saban is a head coach in the NFL. Did not have the success or the track record that he's had, obviously, in college football. But nevertheless, if I were sitting across the table from Nick Saban, it'd be hard to debate him as you describe that debate that the Jaguars are having now between the coach and the general manager. It'd be hard to argue with Nick Saban.
I think so, too. But you're right. He did not have great success at Miami. But, man, he's got it in Alabama. And I guess my question for Randy would have been, too, at Alabama – how much autonomy do the coordinators have under Nick Saban? Because it really seems like a rehab coordinator job. You know, it's a rehab job for people who get fired. Steve Sarkisian, Bill O'Brien, Lane Kiffin. And Saban brings them in, rehabs them, and out they go in a new job. Not Bill O'Brien yet, but curious to think. I wonder how much autonomy they have at the coordinator position, or if it's just really plug and play in Saban's system.
Well, right now we're joined by John Cooper. He is a draft analyst at Our Lads, which we've been reading their Bible, the book they've got, they put out.
I love this
all
thing.
The talent. John, welcome to the show. You're on with David and Carla.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me.
Well, we are excited, as you are, I'm sure, for this evening. Let's begin with the wide receiver class. It seems to be an elite group, and it would probably be more so if Jameis Williams were 100% healthy. But when you stack rank these first three or four receivers, how do you expect them to come off the board?
Well, you know, we like Drake London the best. You know, the fact his 6'5 receiver is hard to find that can, you know, create yards after the catch. He plays the body position game as good as anybody, you know, in terms of going over the middle. And he's a solid football player. Not the fastest of the receivers, but his size more than makes up for that. His catch radius is outstanding. And we think he's going to be a really elite football player. And after that, Garrett Wilson has got speed, the speed you look for. Ohio State has two really good receivers. Treylon Burks is a multi-talented player that can play running back if you need to. He's 6'3", 225, is everything you want from that perspective. Decent speed, excellent hands, and he can run after the catch. Dotson from Penn State, speed guy, another fast receiver. Not quite as fast as some of the other ones, but he's got excellent quickness in and out of his breaks. Chris Olave, another Ohio State receiver that's got excellent speed and good hands. Hard to separate those guys, you know, in terms of what you want. Teams are looking for different things. Some people want that big receiver to use them different ways, maybe even in the slot to create matchup nightmares for the nickel. If Jameson Wilson was 100% going into the draft with his ACL, I mean, you know, he would probably be even higher than some of the guys I mentioned. And we've got him at number 6 and still think he's a first-round pick.
Wow. And, you know, tell me this, John. So, when I was looking through your book about the wide receivers, I thought it fascinating that both London Drake out of USC and Garrett Wilson out of Ohio State had D1 basketball ties. I mean, Drake London played D1 basketball, and Garrett Wilson was being recruited in D1 basketball. Is that unusual?
Well, it is a little bit. I mean, I haven't, you know, we've seen guys like that over the years, but as far as having two guys like that in the first, you know, potentially in the first round this year is unique. But you can see it in Drake London for sure. He's like he plays like a power forward out there,
yeah.
You know, as far as how, you know, he can shield defenders from the football. It's amazing. His body control and the way he plays. We're just a guy who does receivers, you know, works with us on receivers. Fell in love with him last fall. And it hasn't changed. We've never come off of that as the number one guy for us.
Wow.
We're talking to John Cooper of Our Lads, and they produce an exceptional book and analysis on all the players coming out. Does this draft, the top 10, feel as uncertain as most any drafts in history? I mean, they just don't seem to be the consensus quarterbacks at the top. Does it feel as wide open as it seems?
Yeah, it does, because, you know, in fact, we've been talking a lot within ourselves and some of the other guys that we work with about, you know, where these guys are going to go. And I think a lot depends on, is a quarterback going to actually be taken in the top 10? We don't have anybody graded that high, but that need is so strong for teams at times that sometimes people are willing to reach. There's not going to be 1, 2, 3 off the board quarterback this year, which I think creates some of the, you know, the difference there. Because, you know, would Carolina take a quarterback? Maybe. You know, they're talking like Sam Darnold's the guy now. Is Pittsburgh going to try to trade up and take Malik Willis? That's something that we kind of sense might happen. You know, Kenny Pickett, in our mind, is the most NFL-ready, but he's got some holes, you know, mechanically, in our opinion, that have to be addressed. You know, we still like Aiden Hutchinson as the first guy taken. I know there's a lot of chatter about Trayvon Walker going number one. And, yeah, he's a solid player, and I can see where there would be some pause. But, you know, we still like Hutchinson, what he brings to the table, his motor. Like Walker a lot, too. Like Thibodeau a lot. I mean, people seem to be forgetting about, you know, Thibodeau. He's an awful good edge rusher and is a solid football player. I think there's two really good tackles that are up there. Good safety, some corners, receiver. You know, that top 10, you know, could have three corners in it, potentially. It's going to be an interesting.
What about, you just mentioned the corners. The Houston Texans are picking at number 3. Derek Stingley Jr. has been the one rumored that they're going to take. What are your feelings of looking at a Derek Stingley Jr. who's got some concerns about he doesn't like to tackle, he might not be competitive on every snap? Would you take a Sauce Gardner over a Derek Stingley Jr.?
Well, I think I still like Stingley the best, but Sauce Gardner and Trent McDuffie are both excellent players. I would not be surprised if either one of those three was the first corner taken. Stingley is a tremendous talent. I mean, if you're just looking at ability, his ability to mirror route breaks, his fluid hips, his positioning against receivers. If you just look at that ability to cover corner, which is the most important thing for a corner, yeah, you want him to be able to tackle, for sure. He's got to tackle after the catch. But that's something that you would hope you could work on, at least make him he's not horrible. I mean, he is a, you know, wrap-up, hang-on tackler who does miss occasionally. But we could say that about some of the other guys, too, that are playing in the league right now at a high level, you know, for some of these teams. But his ability to mirror and match is elite. And for us, you know, we still have him as the top corner, you know, in the draft. I don't know if he's going to go as high as 3, but if you're convinced you're going to take a corner, I don't think you could go wrong doing that. That said, the other two, I think, are pretty solid players as well. Gardner's number 2 for us. McDuffie's 3. We know people that like McDuffie higher because of his ability to tackle and his consistency. They're a very good player. One thing worries me about Stingley is he hadn't been on the field.
I was just going to say 10 games in 2 years. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He hadn't been on the field. So there's my only real pause with him is he one of those guys that's not going to be healthy? So, yeah, I definitely see that as a problem.
We're talking to John Cooper of Our Lads. So one of the interesting things about this year's first round is the consolidation of picks. So many teams with 2 first-rounders. Do you think that affects the way the teams think about whom they select? Are they willing to take a conservative pick and a risky pick, or are they just going to play it out on the boards? How does this consolidation of picks affect tonight's outcome?
Well, I think it's what you said. I think it's you're going to let it play out and take the best player available in a position of need at, you know, where you're at. You know, Philadelphia and New Orleans kind of control the middle of the draft right now with those multiple picks. And I wouldn't be surprised if there might even be more trading by those teams before it's over. If New Orleans indeed wants a quarterback, are they going to have to play leapfrog with Pittsburgh? You know, I'm not sure what they're looking at, but if the board falls the way they want it, you know, they're going to take the best player on their board at a position of need, you know, qualify with position of need. And, you know, if there's not a guy that has the right value, you know, they're going to go to the next need or they're going to, you know, look to trade.
You know, we're looking at lots of mocks. Obviously, everybody is. But most of the ones I see do not include a tight end or a running back in the first round. Is that fair?
Well, we don't see that either, in all honesty. We think the talent level at the, and the needs that these teams have, you know, is really, you know, stacked at receiver, corner, you know, in particular, some edge rushers in there and some really good offensive linemen. So we could, you know, really see that, that may be the case. You know, the top tight end in our mind is McBride, and we think he's going to go very early in the second round. But if somebody really feels a tight end is a need, you know, I can see them taking him earlier than that. You know, running back, Breece Hall, we actually think he's going to be Jacksonville's pick, or could be Jacksonville's pick in the first pick in the second round. So, and those two guys could very easily be first-round picks, in our opinion.
It'll be fascinating to watch. And your pick for the Jaguars, if you were sitting in that chair, would it be Walker? Would it be Hutchinson?
I would take Hutchinson. You know, I like Walker a lot, and it's like it's kind of like one and one A, you know, as far as where you're going to go. But I would say, in fact, that's what our guy said. You know, one of the guys I work with our lads, exactly his words. But I like Hutchinson's motor. I think it's one of the best motors I've seen. He just keeps coming. He finds a way to get it done. He can play the run. He can rush the passer, and he never stops. And he's got technique. He's not probably the athlete that Walker is, but he's not far behind. And there's the intangible factor that he brings to the table. Mm-hmm. I think anybody would love to have him in their franchise.
Okay, we're seeing all these mocks on what's going to happen in the first round. Is there a player you think is being overlooked who ought to be included more prominently in everyone's consideration for tonight?
Well, let's see. For tonight, you know, there's a couple of guys that, you know, I would have loved to have seen get drafted higher. But Ojabo is the guy that I think about. He's kind of a forgotten man because of his Achilles injury. Where is he going to go? Is a team late in the first round that wants to develop a really good pass rusher going to be willing to take that guy with a first-round pick, or is he going to fall into somewhere in the second round? That's, you know, an interesting player. You know, another guy is the receiver, John Michi. There's so many good receivers.
I love John Michi. I wanted to ask you about him. Give us your thoughts.
Yeah, well, there's your guy right there that I think has got first-round ability. And he's kind of a forgotten player because there's such good receivers. But it wouldn't surprise me if he slipped into the latter half of the first round. You know, you got Green Bay sitting there with a huge, huge needed receiver. And where are these receivers going to go? And, you know, I really like Michi a lot. Our guy that works with receivers loves Michi as well. And so there's a guy that I think has fallen under the radar. It's just that I think he's a first-round pick that might not be in the first round.
Fascinating stuff. He's John Cooper from ourlads.com. John, really appreciate your joining us, and well, we'll look forward to seeing what happens tonight.
Yeah, well, thanks a lot for having me. I enjoyed it.
All right, when we come back, we're going to take a quick look at who's more likely to be traded before tonight's deliberations are done. Who's more likely, Debo or Baker? And you only have to say their first names. Everybody knows who they are. Debo or Baker? That up next when we return here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
It's a special NFL draft edition of The Boss
and The Boss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Free All Deep Penetrating Oil. Look for the Silver Can in stores or visit freealloil.com.
Now, live from Las Vegas, here's David Gal
and Carla Dawson.
All right, when we went to break, we promised that we would address the question, who is more likely to be traded, Debo Samuel or Baker Mayfield? Who's your pick?
For tonight or just during the draft?
Let's say over the next 48 hours, certainly during this draft window.
Oh, I'm definitely saying Baker Mayfield because Cleveland's got their guy. They're done with Deshaun Watson, whether he has sits out games for suspension or not. They're set, they're happy, and they don't want Baker in Cleveland. They did that experiment out. San Francisco wants Deebo Samuel. That's the difference. They don't want him to be traded. I mean, they're not planning to trade him. And they own that, right? I mean, he's not a free agent for another year. So I think it's definitely Baker Mayfield. And it'll see what pans out because I think Baker Mayfield can and will continue to be a starting quarterback in this league. I don't think he's going to be a starting winning quarterback, but he can be a starter.
Well, I guess really the question with Baker Mayfield, as we boil it down, is will he be traded or will he just be released? I mean, he's got that big contract.
I think he'll be traded.
And teams don't want to take that on. Of course, the Browns would hate to just cut him because they're on the hook for that money.
Right.
So
they picked up his fifth-year option.
Yes, I'm sure there's a trade deal where it's very, very light draft capital, and maybe even the Browns picking up a portion of that salary so the salary cap hit would not be too significant for a Panthers team or a Falcons team or a Seahawks team.
Let's talk about a Texans. We could do a little tradey-tradey. You took mine, I'll take yours.
Well, so you were just reading that people are asserting the Texans might be in this market for a quarterback.
For Jimmy G or Baker Mayfield.
I find that hard to believe. I think they're pretty committed to Davis Mills, but we will see. We'll be right back to listening to the Sports Map Radio Network in Vegas.